The following recording is an edited conversation with Cy Trobe, former bandleader with KPO and KFRC in San Francisco in the 1920s and 30s. This recording was made in October of 1970 as Mr. Trobe spoke with a small group of broadcasting students at San Francisco State College.
KPO was initially run by Hale Brothers and the Chronicle, Fifth and Market. Mm-hmm. And it was on the sixth floor of Hale's. Very crude setup, and in fact, all equipment was right in the studio. The monitors were right there, all in one room. But the situation gradually improved. Talent in those days, I hate the word talent, but it's used a lot. It was mostly volunteer with a few pros getting spot programs at, say, $10 a performance. In 1924, they inaugurated broadcasting from the Palace Hotel, which is the Sheraton now. We had a tea orchestra, afternoon tea, and we'd play music every afternoon. And Sunday night, we had a 25-piece orchestra for a Sunday night concert, and that was supposed to be a gala event. They had printed programs. Guests were invited, like a theater. You could sit, if you didn't have to eat, you could just sit there and listen.
When they did things like that, did they use more than one mic, or did they just have you guys all grouped?
No, it was just one mic, the old carbon mic. I was going to write a book one time called Carbon Mic for a title. You know, they had this carbon mic, mm-hmm. and suddenly everything would go dead. A fellow would go up and go, bang, bang, hit it a couple of times, wake up again. They didn't have all these fancy gadgets. They had, no.
How did you arrange your orchestra around it so you could get your best balance?
I wonder if it was a balance. In 1938, though, I had the Bank of America program from the Mutual, on Mutual, and we had one mic in front of that whole orchestra. It's marvelous how they picked it all up. Now, the first orchestra at KPO was a trio. Gene Crowe, C-R-O-W-E, was the program director and the pianist. She's a very nice lady. George Von Hagel was the cellist, and he spoke with rums and grooms, you know. And he had a beard and one of those high collars, you know, that stick up near your throat here. Good old George now. And the violinist was myself. There you have it. We were just brought up there as extras. Just, now, I'm the only one that's living of the three.
What? You were, and this was actually in the studio and not remote.
This was in the studio. We'd call, as I said, we'd get $10 a show, you know. Mm-hmm. We get up and play 15 minutes or something like that. One policy of the KPO, which is very interesting, the policy of KPO was no recordings. Can you imagine something like that nowadays? Everything had to be live. So we were kept pretty busy after mm-hmm. a while. You know where the trouble is with the show business? Is if you make more than the boss, you're in bed. Now, when I was at KPO, the general director, Mr. Laughlin, who was also manager of Hale's, got $5,000 a year. That was good money. Trobe got $600 a week. And it was just added up to that, you know, with the work I was doing. Oh, that used to kill him. But I found out his fallacy. There were two pieces of music he liked. One was the Parade of the Wooden Soldiers. And every time I felt he was in a dither or something, because he was on the same floor as us, and in those days, you didn't have to send to ASCAP what we were playing, report right. every number. You just put anything you wanted on. And he played, da-da-dum-dum-dum, da-da-dum-dum, boop, there's Laughlin's face in the window. Everything was all right. He was too stupid to know I was fooling him. Now, I'll give you an idea what we used to do on KPO. First of all, we had a program called the Rio Masters of Music. Rio was an automobile. It had a horn, da-da-da-da, that was their horn, and that was our theme song, see? Da-da-da-da, and it was went on from 6 to 7 every night, 5 nights a week, and never disappointed an audience for the request. I have the largest library in the country, I guess, personal library. So whatever they asked for, they got. If they didn't have it, I wrote to them and said, we'll play at such and such a date. Mm-hmm. Made wonderful public relations. then we had, now I just, you can remember these quickly, we had an opera hour. We gave a full opera once a week, that is an act a week. We had a light opera 1 hour a week. We had all different shows, Midnight Melodists and Modern Moods, Impressions of American Wastelands. Everybody laughs when I say that. But that was a beautiful program Sunday afternoon. A fellow named Don Thompson wrote the script, and he'd write about legends of the desert in America like that, and we'd set the music to it. We had all sorts of, and now Cy Trowbee's scrapbook. I have enormous scrapbooks of anecdotes of musicians, composers, and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And I'd read as portion of this, say, about Beethoven or Mozart, and then we'd play some appropriate music to follow it. And one time, I became very dramatic. I had a bunch of imps in that orchestra. Oh, gee. I turned around to the mic and I said, would you like to hear of the last hour of Chopin? I was trying to be very dramatic. Some guy hollers, no. I was finished. I was broken up then. Oh, I turned back around a spitball at him. Oh, we had so many wonderful shows there. It was really fun. We had a show in the morning called The Shell Ship of Joy, Shell Oil Company. And a fellow by the name of Hugh Barrett Dobbs was the MC. Good old Dobbs. He's dead now. He still owes me $50. He had a show every morning at 8 o'clock, 8 to 9, but different people on each program. And Horace Height was on there, too. Horace Height was one. That's where he got his start. And I was on Friday, and Horace Height was on Wednesday, and so on. They had different units. And that was the biggest thing on the air. It was one of those things where you had the wishing well in the morning, and you'd say, let's throw out some good wishes, and I'd play some very sad background music. And he was there, no good, dirty. He'd say, be good to your mother, and be good to your sister. And then he'd turn around and he'd bawl out his secretary and mama. And of course, in 1932, that's where the merger started. NBC took over, and everybody, all my men of it, out. And they were humiliated. A lot of them were humiliated, like Mrs. Crow, who was such an important person, was given a little desk in a corner and just to get rid of her, you know. Mr. Laughlin, who was our manager, was a very good friend of mine, and he told me, he said, listen, we go to NBC. In fact, they wanted you over there. While I was at KPO, they all asked me if I'd come over there, but I was loyal to them, see. So I didn't go. And he said, don't worry, I'm going to be taken care of. I didn't have a contract, so I didn't do anything. But then nothing happened. See, Mr. Laughlin got $50,000 commission for selling the station. $500,000, he got $50,000. He got new teeth, a new suit, and it was the end of him, and I got nothing. It was very unkind. So in 1933, I said, well, I go to Los Angeles. Everybody knows me down there. I'm sure I'll be a... Can't wait till I get down there. Well, that was a horrible time to go. That was the height of the Depression. I worked one job for $5 on a show. I didn't need the money. I just wanted to keep busy. Because you have to stay in that city 6 months to join the union there. Well, I got a call one day from a man. He said, do you want to work, Mr. Trowbee? I said, yes, I'll do something to keep busy. He said, this is the Paris Inn. It's a dance hall. Do you mind playing dance? I said, no, I enjoy it, I guess. He said, well, it's from 8 to 1. I said, how much does it pay? He says, $1 a night. I said, you're kidding me. $1 a night? He said, oh, you'll make $3 or $4 in tips. I said, well, I've never worked for tips before. I don't know how to do that. I said, how about the union? Oh, they've sanctioned it. That's how bad things were. $1 a night. Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow. But I played a few programs down there, Grace Moore program and Werner Jansen and people like that. They all knew I was from San Francisco because I was wearing a tie. And that stigmatized you right away. You're no good if you're from San Francisco down there. Well, then I came to KYA when Hearst bought KYA. That was in 34. And we had our studio's right in the Hearst building at the Market Street there. Well, we worked pretty hard there. That was an awful falling off there from 600 to 75. 1938, of course, the Bank of America program came along, and I was with Mel Venner, was the announcer. Then I came to KFRC, see, after that, and we had that breakfast club you're talking about. Mm-hmm. We, what are you going to say? We broadcast this thing in the morning, this mm-hmm. breakfast club. Mm-hmm. One of the board of directors who worked with me heard the same thing in the afternoon. And he said, hey, we didn't do that in the afternoon. You're supposed to pay when you make a recording. So he went to the union. The union called up Pabst. Mr. Pabst, have you ever heard Bill Pabst?
No.
And he said, I'm not going to pay anything. He says, well, you made a recording, you have to pay for it. I don't know, $35 each or something like that. Oh, no, he wouldn't pay it. So they turned it over to the Federation. And by that, Petrillo was then the president. You ever hear of Petrillo? Oh, God. Capone was nothing in comparison. He was one of the Chicago boys, too. And he sent Mr. Pabst a letter that he had to appear at in Florida at an executive board meeting. But Pabst, he had friends down there with yachts and things, and this is wonderful, I have a little vacation, and I'll tell this guy off, you know? So I says, Bill, when you go there, be a nice guy. Don't try to fight him. Tell him, well, you didn't understand. Maybe he'll say, okay, next time don't do it, you know? No, but he was going to go in there and be the tough guy and tell him off. It's like telling off Nixon, you know? Mm-hmm. So he went down there, and he's there for quite about 2 weeks, and he returned. And he came in, and I said, oh, Bill, how'd you make out in Florida? He said, you know me. I'm never afraid of anything. I said, I know you're not. He said, they ushered me into this room. He said, did you ever see that picture of Hitler? You know, he sits it away at the end of the room. And you walk a half a mile to get there. He said, I walked up there and he said, Mr. Pabst? Yeah, sit down. Do I understand that you're not going to pay for that recording? You know what I did? I said, I'll pay. I'll pay. And he did. But you know what it did? It didn't do us any good. When he came back, he cut out all the doubles. You know, flute, clarinet, and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cut them all out. And at the end of the year, he made money on it. He paid us for the recording, of course. You know about the ASCAP situation years ago? You know what ASCAP
is? They put the freeze on the...
Yeah, we had the trouble.
Yeah.
And a very interesting thing, I was at KFRC, and the NAB said, no more ASCAP, hell with it. So overnight, they printed their own music, which was BMI, Broadcast Music Incorporated. And they sent out, it came by the bucketful. And it was horrible stuff. It was all public domain. They did write a few songs. Remember that, I'll Never Smile Again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was one of their first hits. But they take all this, like, Genie with the Light Brown Hair. We played that till we were sick and tired of it. All things that were out of publication, public domain, they'd reprint it. It was full of clinkers. You know what clinkers are? Bad notes. Mm. See, they were done so hurriedly.
Yeah.
And sometimes the music, instead of going straight across, would go up on the side. It was printed so fast. Well, we wouldn't dare. We had to use this stuff because there was nothing else to use. Mm-hmm. Now, the East-West football game came along, and we broadcasted it. Now, they could play the stuff on the field, these marches, you know, the band, but they couldn't broadcast it. So we had to simulate a marching band. So we marched around the studio, and we got the lousiest old band things you ever were out of publication, terrible things. And here comes the Stanford band. We wouldn't dare play the Stanford thing. We kept playing around. And then the fiddle players with the drums. We all had blisters from playing somewhere. And, of course, we horsed around so much. And we had a very nice letter from New York Mutual thanking us for cooperating. We had a funny guy that became manager. And he called me one day. He said, you know, I'd like to change things around here a little bit. I said, yeah, what do you want to change? He says, I'd like you to start a hillbilly band. I said, are you crazy? I said, you'll lose every customer you've ever had here. He said, well, I'd like to have that. He says, I had a fellow try out. I says, what? You had a fellow who tried out? He told me. went up to the union. I says, Walton tried out for the KFRC job. He could never play in that place. You can't do that without permission. See, he was smart. He sneaked in there, see? Mm-hmm. And he wasn't a hillbilly. He just played vibraphones and stuff like that. Well, the end of it was that I said, I've had it. I'm not going to be a hillbilly, and I left. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I had the Current Theater, so I wasn't worried about it. I'm at the Current Theater now, see? It's only my 32nd year. And they said it was going to be a steady job. I don't know.
And you have the orchestra there, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you still play much?
Yeah, sure. I played every day. Mm-hmm. KFRC was an important station in town here.
Yeah.
And to see them down there on, where is it, off Kearney Street in a little, just a little room, you know. And we rehearsed a show at NBC, you know, 111, not 111 set up, but around the corner from the Current, where 44 is now. But so we rehearsed, we needed a place to rehearse light opera, so we went up there. And I recall the buzzing that would go on at that building. 100 musicians all around the place, singers, everything like that. And here was a fellow sitting in the shirt sleeves, putting a record on, and that was all that was being done. And it made a little funny feeling. But here, so many people were working and happy, and people outside were happy. Here it is. I don't know. Maybe I'm a square. I can't get used to some of this stuff.